G'day, g'day. Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and today's guest is my friend, Vienna Farron, who I affectionately joke is Vienna Farron, a conscious queen on a throne with a mind of her own. She's also on Instagram at MindfulMFT. She is undoubtedly an Instagram celebrity, and everybody talks to her. They tell her all the things she needs so she can shift their energy and heal traumatic ancestry with marriage and family therapy mindfully. Of course, she is a gem. She is so grounded and so calm and so soothing. She is a marriage and family therapist operating out of New York. And in this episode, we dive deep into healing and awareness and the stories that we tell ourselves and the benefits of resistance and how we can unpack those, how we can heal ourselves, how we can rewrite the narratives of our lives and become the people that we really want to be. It's a very good episode. She's so wise. So many good suggestions in this. It's a very practical episode as well. There's lots of things that you can take action on today, right after you listen to it, that will help you to understand what's really going on inside your head, inside your heart. You can check her out on Instagram. You can attend a retreat with her and Connor Beaton, who I also interviewed on the podcast. They're doing a thing in New York just inside of 2020 in early January. Check it all out in the show notes. Be well and enjoy. Okay, so I had this idea that I often pitch to people of like, hey, we should maybe focus on this topic. And then we talk about that for 1 minute and then it's just like a tangent into the rabbit hole of awesome. But one idea that I like is how can you improve, what's the easy way to improve every relationship in your life? Like, how do you do that? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's got to be a few foundational things that we can do.
Yeah. Well, I think that the first one is a practice of awareness and observation, right? Like if you're not practicing that daily, then your programming and your conditioning will always be what's taking over. And so if you're wanting to improve anything in your life, it's going to require you to bring presence and awareness forward and to keep doing that over and over again, because, you know, obviously you and I and, you know, many of our friends talk a lot about, you know, that space between, you know, stimulus and response. And we talk about how you have to honor and respect that pause and really bring your attention and observation and awareness to your thoughts, what's happening inside of your head, what your belief systems are, and where those things are leading you. So if you're identifying that there's something that feels unhealthy or dysfunctional in a relationship, whether it's relationship to self or relationship to other, there's no hack, unfortunately, but you know, if there were, it would be you need awareness, observation of self, and you know, that practice of reflection daily, many times daily.
Yeah. So maybe that'll be a good starting point. We can start there and then explore what that looks like and how it can be used in a day-to-day experience, right?
I thought we had already started.
Oh, let's start then. Okay. Well, hang on. I have to do my official start then if we're really starting. Okay. Ready?
I'm ready. I was in.
Okay. Okay. Hang on. Ready? Vienna Farron, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jeremy. We're here.
Now it's totally official.
It's official.
So we're going to dive into all the things relationship and love and individual issues, etc. But For those people listening who don't actually know you or what your deal is, maybe can you just explain who the hell you are and what you do? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So my name is Vienna Farron, and I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. I practice in New York City. So I have a private practice here, and Yeah, I work with individuals and couples all within the context of relationships. You know, generally it's romantic relationships that are bringing people in, but you know, the work for me has a ton to do with the family systems that we were a part of, and that continue to be a part of. And so, you know, for me, it's really understanding the deep history that we have experienced, as well as the generational history sort of our lines, and sort of seeing how we recreate patterns and how we do that healing work with ourselves and with each other. So got my practice here. I run Mindful MFT on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I do loads of workshops, retreats, speaking engagements, panels, et cetera, so pretty busy, online courses, you know, all that good stuff.
So you're like a love doctor that helps people love better.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a...
So, and like, I actually don't know the answer to this question, but like, how'd you get into this? Like, why is this your thing?
Oh, so... I say that because I'm surprised that you don't know.
I mean, I know like where you went to school and who one of your professors was.
No, it started way before that. Yeah, I mean, I think that the story begins around my parents' separation when I was in first grade, and observing and experiencing their divorce process that took about 9 years. And, I'm an only child, and so I did a lot of going back and forth and took on different roles between my parents, and they presented very differently from one another, but it was really chaotic and hard and challenging for me. And then they transitioned through life and became, you know, pretty good friends. And I think when I started to see a lot of the shifting and transitioning happen, I got very curious, like how these relationships can start to shift and change. And sort of present to, you know, the divorce process itself, I think, you know, from a very fear-based place, it was, what do I need to do to safeguard my own relationships? Because this is not something that I would want to repeat. And so, you know, from an unevolved place, it was like, let me swing that pendulum, because I certainly never want to, you know, find myself in this situation. So it drove my desire and my education around that. But then from a much more evolved place, it settled in and grounded in. But yeah, I mean, I think if there was a quick answer to it, it's my life story. And it's the, you know, being part of a divorce process that was, you know, very challenging and difficult, you know, for everybody who was involved, and thinking, you know, probably pretty early on, gosh, like, we need to understand these types of things better. We don't have the training and the tools and the education. Like, we just see it, we observe it, we experience it, and then we either repeat it or we oppose it, but we have no idea, you know, what it is that we're doing until we bring attention and awareness forward. So, was a little bit about it.
Yeah. So were you like trying to understand the pain involved, or trying to make sense or regain control of the situation in some way?
I mean, I think that regaining control of, like, I don't ever want to experience this. Like, I never want to be in a situation like this, because I saw how painful and damaging it was for everyone. And yeah, I mean, I think it was like, what do I need to do to make sure that this doesn't happen to me? Like, I don't ever want to go through this. Right. And I think when you're so, you know, pained by those types of experiences, whatever it is, right? For me, it was the divorce, but you know, for me, I just zoned in on like, how do I protect myself? And for me, the protection was, you know, education and, you know, going to school for it and like really taking that front seat, literally like sitting in front of people over and over again, and learning and breaking down relationships and understanding why some succeed while others become unhealthy and disconnective and harmful. Yeah, definitely a protective manner.
I love that. It seems so often that people that I meet or engage with in the personal development space have somehow transformed their pain into purpose, mm-hmm. right? And that
in your example, it seems like the divorce and the, you said 9 years of a divorce process.
Yeah.
That seems like a little bit drawn out to me.
It was the record in New Jersey at the time. I don't know if anybody has surpassed it since then, but yeah.
So what is it? Actually, I've hijacked my own question, but like, what does that even mean? A 9 year process? That's from like filing papers to signing papers, or?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess I don't even know exactly what it means, but sure. When the divorce itself got finalized and the papers, you know, went through. Yeah.
Okay. And then you realize through that sort of extended pain that perhaps that suffering was largely unnecessary to some extent, and desire to not have that in your life moving forward as an adult.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to repeat that, you know, to go through something like that again and again and again, you know, you go through it again and again and again as a child. And certainly my parents did, you know, like the fighting for things, you know, whether it's from custody to like what you believe your child should be doing or shouldn't be doing, or, you know, how you split the time. I mean, it's a lot, you know, there's so much constantly revisiting this over and over and over again. And, you know, not wanting to recreate that pattern, and to be able to find, you know, a sense of healing so that I wasn't calling that in, you know, in my own adult life.
Mm. Yeah, I remember that. So my parents got divorced when I was 6, and I remember it being similarly impactful, let's say. And I remember being a kid, you know, 6 or 8 or whatever, and just wondering why. Like, why is this happening? Or what? You'd get bits and pieces of the real story. It's like, why is my mom so upset tonight? Like, why is, like, what is court? And like, what is a monthly payment? And why is that such a big deal in my family? And trying to make sense of all that, I think, consequently resulted in dramatic changes in myself and my own ways that I showed up in the world, right? Like, for example, I remember, codependency, I think is the phrase associated, but I remember like comforting my mom. I remember, taking care of my sister and being very prideful about that. Like, I got it. Like, mom's crying. Like, I'll give her a head massage. Like, I got it. And I look back at that now as an adult. I'm like, man, I was like 8 years old trying to be the head of the family, or like trying to be the man of the house, to use that phrase. You're like, huh. It wasn't until I was in my 30s where I actually had that insight of like, huh, wonder if that actually influenced me now. It turns out, yes.
Just a little bit, huh?
Just a little bit. But I think the larger point is that our past has a dramatic influence on who we are today. Yeah. And when we start to unpack those stories, we can change those stories and consequently change ourselves today. Mm-hmm. That's like my synthesis of what therapy is to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think it takes the awareness, and then the action, the intersection of those things, right? I think a lot of times people have aha moments, or they're able to trace certain things that make a whole lot of sense to them, or they can see that, you know, they're dating or they're attracted to a certain, you know, type of partner that is familiar to them in some ways, but then they keep doing it, right? Or they don't know how to shift out of that space. And so, you know, the action component of this can be so hard, where that integration of knowledge and that integration of wisdom and understanding actually gets put into motion, where we're able to shift the trajectory of our lives so that we don't keep revisiting, you know, the same lesson sort of over and over again.
Mm. And so it starts with the awareness that you mentioned at the beginning of this discussion. And then it sounds like the second component is making different choices based on a new path.
So sometimes those choices can happen pretty easily. So you have an aha moment, or you have an awakening, or you have an awareness that's brought forward. And then boom, all of a sudden you're like, yep, I know how to change this. And I can start to put that into motion. But a lot of times people will have that awareness and they still find themselves in the pattern and in the loop. And people get frustrated by that. See, I know what I'm doing. I know why I'm drawn in. I know why this pattern is here, but I don't know what to do about it. And so when awareness doesn't equal change, right, that requires more attention from us. We do get very frustrated when the change, when like the outcome isn't shifting, even though we've woken up to something.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I was most intrigued by when I was doing my thesis, is we have this idea that knowledge equals behavior change. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, when I know something, then I'll just make a different decision. And that rational approach of how humans operate is fundamentally flawed, because we're crazy people. We're emotional, irrational, intense. We have all these things. So
we're deeply programmed, right? So it's like just because we identify something doesn't mean that our programming all of a sudden adjusts, right? Our programming runs really, really deep, right? And so like, you know, whatever that quote is that like, you know, like, what, it's not the once you know better than like, but it's like, is it that if you don't create the change like the second time, then like it's a choice? Or do you know what I'm talking about? This quote is falling flat.
I really wish I knew what you were talking about and I could just save you here, but I think it's something like I've heard it described as like, first time shame on you, second time shame on me is one.
Yeah, right. So it's a version of that. Maybe later in the podcast, I will remember it. But basically, it's saying that like the second time that you do something, it's a choice and it's not a mistake. Mm. And I think that that's not giving us enough, you know, wiggle room in our humanness to realize that like just because we are aware of things, it doesn't mean that the shift or the change happens really quickly. And certainly this is not an escape route of, you know, ownership and accountability, but I do think that it's important for us to recognize that sometimes, you know, overcoming our programming and conditioning is going to take a whole heck of a lot more than just awareness and a realization about something.
Yeah. It's like a gentle accountability, right? It's like, yeah, you know that you date only unavailable men. But there might be a little one or two hiccups before you find your person that's a securely attached, communicative, vulnerable human.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like a lot of times when we keep finding ourselves in cycles and patterns that are reflective of an old wound, there is still an attachment and a storyline that is playing internally that we might not be conscious to, that is still proving something for us, that still requires more attention. Right? That like in that space, even though I, you know, as a classic example might be, I choose unavailable men because, you know, my father wasn't around or my father wasn't available and wasn't, you know, giving me attention. Like your most basic classic example of this, it's like, you know, you can go into that space and say, well, I know it, you know, it's my dad, you know, my dad and this and that, right? But if you really have this story that's attached to, well, it's because I'm not deserving of love, like what I made it mean. And that's a really good question to ask yourself. This is for your listeners, right? Is like, what did I make it mean? Right? Whatever it is, like, what did I make it mean? Because if you made it mean that you are not deserving of love, that you're not good enough for it, that if a father can't love you, how could anybody else? Like if a parent can't do it, then like a new person is going to do that? No way. But like if you made it mean something like that, then having this awareness of why you choose someone is not going to change that pattern. You've got to do the work about shifting what you made it mean. Right? You have to change that. Otherwise, that meaning making is going to cling to you.
Mm. And so how do you do that?
By bringing attention to it, by journaling about it, by being with it, by feeling into it, you know, whether it's therapy, whether it's coaching, whether it's your journal and processing and allow, giving yourself time every single day to, you know, drop into, you know, what is the story? What does it serve for me to hold on to it? You know, is it true? Is it untrue? Where is there space here? What does it look like for me to reconcile this or resolve this internally with myself, right? Like, we don't need anybody else in this space. You don't need a parent to show up for that conversation, to do that healing work. If they can, it's wonderful. You know, that's a bonus, but we don't need anybody else to do that healing work, to come to terms with, this is what I made it mean, but here's how I'd like to reframe it. You know, here's what I'd like to do with it as I move forward here. Right? And I need to reconcile that. I actually recently posted a quote that was talking about how, like, children are not hard to love. And, you know, when a parent or caregiver really struggles with that, this is about their lesson, their work. It's something like that we as children are confronting something with them. But when you can start to bring that idea forward, that, like, innately you are not hard to love, even if you received that message, even if there was data and evidence that suggested that a parent didn't want to be around you, didn't want to even really be a parent, didn't want to have you as a child, you know, was busy doing other things or was prioritizing other things, let's say, or like this, that was about them. That wasn't about you. And because as children, you know, it's so easy to personalize it, right? That's all we know to do. It's like, what's the matter with me? Mm-hmm. Right? What's wrong with me? Why don't you want to be around me, or why don't you love me enough? Right. And so we're having, when you ask, like, what do you do then? It's, you have to spend time in that space, flushing that out and getting deeply present and connected to your feelings, your emotions, your experiences. You need to witness yourself. You need to acknowledge what is there for you. And then you need to start to expand from there and reframe and decide where you're going to move that and what story you want to take with you so that you can start to shift that. That pattern.
Do you have any suggestions for those listening who, in terms of how to feel things, like how to go to that place that is uncomfortable, or perhaps it's a space that you've been avoiding for a while? Like, I know I need to deal with this, but I'm busy, or I've got to watch Netflix, or I need some wine, or whatever.
Oh, the distraction.
The distraction, yeah. Right? What's the idea with that?
I mean, I think that shifting environments is really powerful. So, you know, whether it's an environment like going out into nature and taking a journal with you and just getting present to, you know, earth, and feeling into that, you know, that can sometimes be really awe-inspiring and open us up to feeling certain things. I've had clients who have been able to access it because they've put music on, you know, they've allowed them, they sort of put an eye mask on and just put on a soundtrack that invokes emotion for them, just to bring some of it forward. I've had other clients who would also report, like, it's really hard for me to feel and I don't know how to do it, but there's this one movie, you know, that just, like, gets me. Or there's, like, something that is seen in a movie that is reflective of maybe something that's happened in their own lives. And so it's a way to access it. Some people access it in a shower, you know, it feels like a safer, more secure place to be. But I think, you know, from a practical standpoint, you know, you could potentially Google a list of emotions truly and, like, start to look at it and see which ones did I actually feel. Right? Because a lot of times people are like, I know five, you know, they're like, yeah. I have access to five emotions. I think there might be more, but I just don't know what their names are. You know, so, like, even something like that, where, you know, if you Google a list of emotions, it will pop up and you will find, you know, hundreds of them. And to even print out that sheet and maybe highlight, like, okay, I think I felt this before. I think I felt this. And so seeing some of those things in front of you where you don't have to go searching for it in your own brain, it's right in front of you and you can just start to highlight that, can be a really good way, easy, practical way that can bring attention to, okay, I did feel this and maybe now I can journal a little bit about it.
So the main benefit of that is putting a name to the sensation in your body?
Naming it, acknowledging it, witnessing it, you know, it's the shift in what you said before, like, I want to avoid this. It's bringing it out of the dark and into the light. Mm. You know, like, we like to store things that are uncomfortable in the dark. You know, we don't want to go there. Sometimes we're afraid of what will happen if we go there. What will happen to us? What will happen to our thoughts about a certain person in our family? You know, will this change the relationship? And so you have to be aware of, what are the things that I'm doing to protect people? And is that happening at the expense of me being able to feel?
Mm. And so how do you kind of prioritize the need to feel and describe your own emotional experience with the responsibility or obligation as a parent, as a partner, etc.?
You put a time limit on it. You give yourself
literally?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I think a lot of times people are like, oh my gosh, if I do this, I'm going to be in that space for a very long time and I don't know. And right. Like, so you can absolutely say, I'm going to give myself, you know, 20 minutes and then I'm going to close the journal and I'm going to take care of all of the other things that I have to take care of. But you know, otherwise we're going to constantly find a reason not to, you know, like, we're going to constantly find the distractions. We're all busy. We've all got things to do. We all have responsibilities that, you know, are outside of just us. But if we aren't taking good care of our emotional state and really having that sense of intimacy with our own selves, right? Going innermost and being present to our innermost feelings, thoughts, experiences, and world, then we're actually doing a disservice to all of those around us. So if 20 minutes is what you have, 10 minutes is what you have in a day, do it. And then close the book and go to the next thing.
Yeah, I look at it from a metaphoric or an analogous to a physical exercise. So it's better to do 5 push-ups than no push-ups, right? And so in that sense, it might mean 5 seconds of screaming into a pillow versus not. And you would suggest that 5 seconds is significantly more beneficial than keeping it down, letting it build, letting the pressure build until it eats you up or explodes in some future way.
Yeah.
Okay. So setting a timer, figuring out how you're feeling, letting yourself feel them.
Just so we're clear, setting the timer is for the people who are very resistant to this,
right?
You know, I think what I'm hearing you say is like, okay, so the people who really struggle with this, who like really don't know how to name or access feelings, like, what are the things that we do and how do we do this, right? And so it's like, not everybody is going to need the list of emotions. Not everybody is going to need to listen to music to access it. And certainly not everybody is going to set a timer. But I think for people who are like, ugh, I don't know about this, and like, I'm not sure, you know, those are good ways to start leaning into it.
Okay, I love that. And let's swing to the totally opposite side of the spectrum. Because I imagine there's someone listening to this. It's like, oh God, like, I have no issue. Like, I cry all the time. I'm quote unquote too emotional, right? Like, I can't put a timer to the end of my sensations. Like, what do you suggest for those types of folks?
Well, I mean, I think that our feeling needs to be purposeful and intentional and deliberate, right? Like, when we hang out in that space without being intentional, it can be very overwhelming, right? And that's why a lot of people will swing all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum sometimes, because hanging out there for too long, it takes us away from other things in our lives that are grounding and stabilizing and balancing for us. You know, outside of acute moments, right? I think we have to be clear here. Like, you know, sometimes there are acute moments in our lives where all we are going to do is feel, you know, like
grief is one example that popped in my head.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So I think, you know, just so we get a little bit clearer here in this conversation, you know, there are going to be times where feeling is going to take over, where we are in our beds and we are crying and it's hard to get up and it's hard to feed ourselves. And it's, you know, that stuff is what's happening. But outside of, you know, these sort of acute moments, we have to be taking good care of ourselves and not overextending, because I think a lot of times we can loop and overplay the replay of what happened and this, and then we start to pick up more and more details and pieces that get us into this space that actually isn't healing and intentional or deliberate to moving the energy at all. We sort of cling to the suffering, and we have to be very careful about clinging to the suffering and staying in that space. Yes, like the awareness of that, of, you know, what is this serving for me? And sometimes crying for 8 hours in the day is going to serve something perfect, right? Like sometimes that is absolutely what it is that we need. But when we can ask ourselves those accountability questions to say, is this serving me, or do I need to move myself? You know, do I need to, whatever, go for the workout, take my camera outside and take pictures of nature? Like asking those questions is very helpful to know, is what I'm doing serving something intentional and deliberate or not?
Love that. And you just used this phrase that I want to go back to. You said something about clinging to the suffering versus healing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious if you could unpack that a bit. So why do we do that? Mm-hmm. I imagine it's, you know, going back to things that were said to us or experiences that we've had that really stung or really hurt. Mm-hmm. And we kind of keep reliving them again and again, yeah, clinging to that suffering rather than choosing to go to a place of healing and processing.
Yeah. You know, I think you're familiar with the confirmation bias and, you know, how often we can find ourselves looking to prove, you know, our biases correct. And when data and evidence presents itself to say, yeah, there it is, like, see, they don't love you, or see, your life sucks, or see, you know, like, we tend to do it with the negative stuff.
Yeah. The one that I often hear is like, this always happens to me, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's like, so, you know, when we're constantly seeking for something to prove the narratives that we hold internally already. And that's why awareness and observation of thoughts is so powerful, to see, ooh, like, where did that come from? You know, like, ooh, okay, I see that I just created something there, or I made this mean this. I talk like, we are meaning makers. My goodness, we're so good at it. We can make anything mean whatever we want it to mean. Try it. It's pretty wild. Like, you can make anything mean whatever you want it to mean based on whatever path you're committed to going down.
Mm. I actually had an exchange yesterday on the internet with, if you can imagine, with a woman, and it was around this idea. And I had posted something a couple of days or weeks ago exploring the idea that nothing is good or bad. It just kind of is, right? And that isness is a very empowering thing, because we get to decide what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And she kind of pushed back and said, yeah, well, there are bad things in the world. There are things like sexual assault. There are people that get their money stolen from them, etc. And how can you possibly suggest those are good, right? Mm-hmm. And I kind of gently...
Well, you weren't suggesting that they're good. You're suggesting they are.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So there's a difference, I suppose, between, and I probably should have clarified that to her, but I think there's a difference between, you know, no one will argue that like getting punched in the face is like a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's not great to get punched in the nose, right? But hypothetically, to continue this weird story, if you then go to the hospital and your doctor is super cute and you go on a date with them and you get married, and you have three babies, and you end up writing a book about the experience that wins an Academy Award starring Julia Roberts as you, then, like, one would potentially argue that getting punched in the face might have been the best thing to ever happen to you, mm-hmm. right? Like, not only is it good, but it's, like, life-changing and profound, and sure, you wouldn't trade it for the world. Mm-hmm. And so going back to this idea of maybe it is good, maybe it is bad, but you get to decide with the right perspective and the right intention, what to create from that experience?
I mean, I think we have to feel into the things that are happening in our lives. And yeah, I mean, we generally associate sort of positive or negative or good or bad to the things that happen. You know, I think sometimes when it's trauma, it can feel too quick probably to name it as it just is. But I also understand what it is that you're saying, because I think, you know, what you said before, like turning your pain into purpose, you know, I am so honored to see how people daily turn trauma into purpose, you know, find their healing, that there's a reclamation that winds up happening in this space. Now, of course, no one is going to ever suggest that what happened was good. Thank God it happened. I'm so glad that this happened. You know, it's never going to be about that. But I think that perspective of this did happen, right?
Mm. And you see some of that, like, bypassing in a way of like, oh, chin up, like, just be positive. Yeah, it's not that bad. And you're like, I just got cheated on. Like, my life is falling apart. Like, it is that bad, right?
Yeah, like I'm present to what emotions and feelings are being charged in my internal experience, right? And then, as we do that processing, right, we're able to, you know, we can get to a place where we can look at it and call it what it was, but then choose to either use it or, you know, or cling to it and have it be something that blocks us from our healing. You know, we have the capacity to move into healing always. Right. Now, the timing of that may look different for us, and depending on what's happening in our lives, it might take longer. It might be a harder mountain to climb as we face parts of ourselves that we have to meet. And, you know, there can be a lot of resistance in that space. But I think knowing that we can get to this place where we can look at it and call it what it is, and then decide where we place it in our lives and what we're going to do with it. You know, trauma shouldn't be something that blocks us from claiming our healing. And yet it will take up space for, you know, an undisclosed amount of time for each of us in a way that we don't necessarily get to decide. So.
And so then, just to build on that, do you suppose there's like a resistance to healing at some kind of subconscious level?
Listen, there can be. So like, I've worked with plenty of people where we've identified where that resistance is, right? So not necessarily for everyone, but like, for example, I've had people say in their aha moment, holy shit, I didn't realize that I've been clinging to my suffering because I don't know who I would be without like telling that story over and over and over again. Like how I connect with other people is through storytelling and sharing these details. And if this stuff isn't happening, like who wants to be around me?
Yeah. Well, who am I?
Who am I? Right.
That's super confronting.
Another way that we can cling to it is if we, it's generally not a conscious thought, but where we might think that we are abandoning ourselves by healing, right? So like if no one witnessed our pain, our trauma, our wounding, and then we quote unquote heal from it, a lot of times that healing can be misunderstood and feel like we are leaving it, right? And so if it hasn't been experienced and felt fully, our unconscious mind might cling to it because it's the way of making sure that we ourselves as the individual do not leave ourselves. Does that make sense?
That's some deep shit, V.
Okay. Yeah, right?
Right? It's like, I mean, that's not like super... Yeah. That's not some superficial level kind of stuff. That's like, okay, yeah, can we dance with that for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were going to give an example.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think a lot of people are aware of the terms around reparenting and, you know, the inner child work. And I think we tend to think of a hurt, pain, trauma that happens earlier on in our lives and, you know, what we maybe didn't get as a child, let's say. And so if that child, like I like to think about that, like for me, the little girl within me, like when I think of her, I think of her usually around age six-ish. And so when I get deeply present to her, and I know sometimes this can sound a little out there, but she wants to be listened to. And so I would put this out to everybody who's listening to think about, like, where in your life, you know, have you not felt fully seen or understood or witnessed or experienced? And because that's how I used to think about it for myself in doing my healing work, is like, it's coming back to that little girl who's saying, please don't leave me, right? Like, I've only got you to listen to me, right? So it's like this inner child who's also me, right? So like, I'm trying to make this not get super confusing. But going back to that example that I was giving is that, you know, if the little girl within thinks that if you go off and you heal and you go ahead and live that great old life, like that you're going to be leaving me and that I'm never going to get the witnessing or the attention or the deep sense of understanding that I've been craving my entire life, then I am going to punch you from the inside.
Forever.
Right? Forever. Like, I will not let you do it. Right. I think of her as like, just, you know, like just jabbing from the inside, like, I'm going to cling to this because you need to bring attention to me. You need to bring attention to something that hasn't been given enough attention. Right. So when, again, this idea of like, if you find yourself in patterns or cycles where you know, wait, I know what this thing is, but I'm still here and I can't figure it out. It's a really good indicator that something has not been acknowledged, understood, felt deeply into by you in your own life, right? That something needs more attention from you before it will release and like let that grip loosen a little bit.
Mm. And then any suggestions for how to identify specifically what that might be? I know earlier we talked about making some space or getting in nature with a journal to feel things. Yeah. Is it just that?
It can be. I mean, I think that journaling is really powerful in this space. And sometimes the first, you know, couple of pages of journaling are like, I don't know what to write. And this seems really stupid. Mm. I don't know, this is dumb. I was listening to a podcast and somebody told me to do this. And I hate it. Like, I don't know what to say. You know, like it can sound like that, but eventually we start to move into the space of like, what are the experiences that were challenging and hard and confronting? What were my insecurities as a kid? What did I crave as a child and not get? How did I feel about a sibling? What were those relationships like? And you start to go into it. What was I affected by the most? What did I not like about what, you know, X parent did or Y parent did? You know, it's like you just start going and you allow yourself to, you know, just see where the pen moves you to.
Hmm.
It will go if you're willing to go there, it will go. But I think also like, what is it that I've been avoiding in my life is another good prompt, which sometimes is hard because if we're avoiding really well, we
yeah, that's the power of going to see an expert like yourself, yeah. Right?
Well, it's true, right? I think that if you're really struggling with this, it's you know, finding a professional who can guide and challenge you to look at things in a safe environment.
Mm. Okay. And so if you do the free writing, the way I've heard it described with writing is like, if you have writer's block, you just set a timer like 10 minutes and you just shut your judgment brain off and you just go like as it comes out, it goes onto the paper. And that's a really good way to just get to the deeper stuff. And then what would you say to somebody that's like, okay, I did that. I've realized that as a kid, I never, you know, I felt ignored all the time. Right? Because of my family dynamics or whatever. It's like, okay, great. Well, what do I do with this truth? Right? Now what?
Yeah. So, you know, from there, I might ask, what are the ways you ignore yourself?
Today? So like,
Yeah. Right. So like really starting to pay attention to like, how does it show, how is it showing up now? How am I recreating this in any way? What if we went back a little bit further, it might be like, what is it that you wanted them to see? Right. How, like, what were you hoping that they would acknowledge or pay attention to or prioritize? And starting to get that person the name and start moving some of that out, right? So again, I think that there is value in having somebody who can ask some of the questions that you might not be able to ask or know to ask, so that you can start diving in a little bit further.
And I feel like in my own experience, sometimes just the awareness of the truth and then the speaking of the truth out loud, it can be the healing in itself. Like, oh my God, I do this. Holy shit. I do this. And I did it in that relationship, in that one, and I do it to myself. Holy moly. And then you can't necessarily, at times I find that I can't go back to doing that thing. I can't unknow what I now know, right? And so the way I think of it is that I change by epiphany or unraveling. Like I hit rock bottom or I have some kind of insight. And those seem to be the two ways that I favor transformation.
So, I mean, it is sort of how people do it. A lot of people believe that they need to hit rock bottom before change happens. And, you know, I generally like to suggest that we don't have to get there, right? That like curiosity and observation and a willingness to, you know, meet parts of yourself or meet parts of others that we can find and reveal a lot of things to ourselves.
Is that part of it also then, this sort of judgment that I haven't suffered enough? Like I have to continue to suffer. I'm not worthy of healing. I'm not worthy of greatness. I'm not worthy of a happy life because this thing happened to me.
That could be somebody's narrative. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to, there's so many things I could ask you that I'm kind of overwhelmed. I'm like, okay, I like the idea of like taking big concepts and complicated ideas and trying to simplify them. That's why I keep peppering you with like, okay, so what's three tips or like, what do you do with that? Or, and then what? Right. Uh-huh. But it sounds like it goes back to the idea of just the awareness, the creating space and time to really explore and feel into what's going on inside of you, and then acknowledging that and clarifying it with writing or conversation with others.
Yes. But what you're getting at is also understanding, if I know certain things, but I keep finding myself in certain places, then I must ask the question, what is my resistance serving?
It's like, so you're benefiting somehow.
You are benefiting
from not doing the thing that you want to do.
That's right.
Okay.
Which I know sounds very backwards and can be very confusing, because you're like, why the hell would I want to do that? But it has to serve something. It never doesn't serve something. It has to serve something. So you've named it, right? Like maybe it serves this belief that I need to suffer more. Maybe it serves the part of me that thinks that if you move on, you're going to abandon little me, inner me. Maybe it means that like I don't have a story to tell, or who am I without it, right? Like there's an answer there. So I would really encourage people who are listening, who are maybe identifying with, oh my gosh, I've had all these awarenesses and these aha moments, and I know the things and I know my patterns, but I'm still stuck and I'm still choosing something, to ask that question, right? What does my resistance serve? There will be an answer there. And when you have that answer, it's a really big key to unlocking what happens next, because then you get to hang out with that part, and that part moves out of the shadow and into the light, and it becomes something that you can actually work with.
Boom.
Boom.
Yeah. And you touched on one example earlier when you said something like that, if you are always the sad one or whatnot, that's the victim. You get attention that way. You receive love. You receive connection from other people because you're sharing that part of your life. And if you take that away, then it's also, I suppose, a threat to that connection, to that story about being unlovable, etc.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I've heard this before with other people, that you'll hypothetically go out and you'll meet people, and then within 1 minute or 2 minutes, they're talking about their depression, or that they're a widow, or that they're you know, they just got in a car accident or something. And I've thought in my brain, like, why? That's so interesting that you're telling me this immediately after 1 minute, right? And that sort of the difference, I suppose, between that vulnerable share and also like the intention behind it being, hey, give me attention, tell me how much you feel bad for me, etc.
Yeah, maybe, right? Or like, I don't know how to connect to you without a story like this, or yeah, I think that there could be so many different things that bring something like that forward, which maybe feels like an oversharing moment. Where like I have, you know, how Brené says, you know, haven't earned the right to hear this part of your story. Mm-hmm. So it's like, a bit intrusive. So yeah, I mean, I think as many people as there are as many different, you know, stories and things that our resistance can serve. Yes, there may be themes and there may be certain, you know, common ones that can come forward that we've named here. But again, I think that this work of being willing to look and ask some of those questions and face something that you might not want to face could be the difference between staying in the loop and staying in that pattern and staying in the suffering, or being able to release yourself from it because you've done what you've needed to do for yourself to take that next step. You can't jump over a step when it comes to healing. That's the thing. You don't get to jump. You don't skip levels. It will keep you where you need to stay, and then, you know, unlock from there.
Yeah, you don't get to say, no, I know what I'm supposed to do. I don't need to feel sad. I don't need to grieve. It's fine. I know that I need to journal. I just bought a book. Like, I bought a puppy. Like, yep. It feels shit for a little while.
That's right. Although puppies are great and are probably the closest thing.
Yeah. This podcast is definitely not anti-puppy.
No.
Just to clarify. Okay. So what about in your own world? Like, is there something right now that you're leaning into or that you're really excited about? Like an idea or your edge, so to speak? Like,
totally.
What is
my edge right now is writing a book.
Oh, and shit.
I have a lot of resistance to it. yeah.
We got to talk because I just spent like the morning working on a book proposal.
Nice.
Like, I think we're in a similar boat.
Yeah.
It's bringing up all the limiting stories in my brain. The judgment, the comparison, the you're not good enough. Like, so, yeah. So what's it bringing up for you?
So, I mean, I have the publishing company and I have the agent and, you know, all of the things are sort of there. But it's very hard for me to lean into it because I feel that it will take me away from the work that I really love to do, which is seeing clients. And writing a book takes a lot of time and very like committed, focused energy. And so, yeah, like I'm just sort of playing with that idea. I used to think that I hadn't earned the right to write the book yet, but I have been able to move through that one. I think I've got some stuff to say and I'm excited to say it, but I think I need to really feel into like truly what the focus is and then really surrendering to the shifting that my life would require here. Cause I can't, you know, 35, 40 clients a week and do all the other things that I do and then also write a book simultaneously.
Mm. So what's the fear around? Is it that you're disappointing your clients or that you are not?
I love that work. I don't know that I love writing a book.
What if it turns out that you love writing a book more than you love working one-on-one with 40 clients a week?
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. I just haven't gotten there yet.
That's rad. And so what are you going to do about it? Like what, I mean, are you going to take the time off? Are you going to do it part time?
I don't think that I would ever take the time off. But I think it would have to be a part time thing. And maybe in chunks, maybe in, you know, taking a week somewhere or doing things like that. But I need to really feel into like why I'm writing it and making sure that it's deeply aligned, because I don't do well when I do things for other people and not because it's coming, you know, from me.
Yeah, it's that idea. If it's not a hell yes, it's a no, right?
Well, there's a lot of like, you should write a book. Oh my gosh, like everybody's waiting for it. Da, 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 you know, and that becomes a distraction. Like I need to really feel into it, and it needs to come. It needs to be fully birthed by me.
Yeah. And I imagine that it would be a bit of pressure as well. If you've got the agent, you've got the publisher, you've definitely got the following. You have like a small country on Instagram that follows you. And so people are asking for it. They're waiting for your knowledge. Yeah. You know that it could be done.
I'm also not super interested in what comes afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So why is that?
Because usually what comes after a book is, you know, a lot of speaking engagements and keynotes and things like that. And again, it's just, I've obviously spoken many, many, many a times, but it's not, it's like, it's not my love. Like I love seeing clients. It's a totally different lane that is my edge for sure. And I'm sort of leaning into, and of course I can set boundaries and I don't have to do anything that I don't want to do. And
I love it.
It's all the things, like I'm just feeling into it, but I also don't particularly enjoy a ton of attention, so I know a book can maybe
that is exactly the deeper thing. Yeah. Right, like the being seen.
I might need to journal about this.
Yeah, you might need to go. You need to go
and watch a scene in a movie.
Yeah.
And cry in the shower.
Yeah. Where are you not giving yourself attention in life? Isn't that the question?
Oh, what is your resistance serving?
What is your resistance serving? Well, that's it. I mean, I'm sure anybody listening can relate to that. You know, this is why public speaking is one of the biggest fears, right? And it's the being seen, and it's the trying with your whole heart to do something or create something or be something and failing, quote unquote, whatever that means, and letting people down. And you do have a small country of followers, and what if they don't like it? And what if it doesn't change lives? I'm just throwing my own projected fears at you.
Yeah. For me, it's actually none of that. I don't have a worry about the book itself and like letting people down or it not being good. Like that actually isn't it for me. It sounds like it might be it for you though.
Yeah, totally. came up like literally an hour ago too. Yeah. Before we jumped on this call, I was just stuck in the muck. I'm like, oh my God, this is so interesting.
Own little session here. I mean, I think it's like taking me away from the thing that I really love to do. And I don't mind being seen. Like I am fine speaking and I enjoy it. And I really deeply trust in the things that I have to say. And they're important and they're meant for some people for sure. Right. But it's like, there's just a major shift that I think happens in that space that I don't know. Maybe it's just a transition in life that I am not quite ready for or prepared for.
Well, I love it. I'm excited to read your book.
But I'm naming it and I'm saying it out loud on this podcast because I'm pushing myself to move in that direction. So
how can I or the person listening to this support you?
With the book?
With this thing that you're working through, your edge. How can we keep you on your edge?
I don't know. That's a good question because I don't think it's asking me how the book is going.
It's definitely my experience writing a PhD thesis is it's definitely not that question. And the other question that it's definitely not is, when are you going to be done?
Yeah.
And it's definitely not, what are you doing after that? Mm-hmm. Which for you, it sounds like there's some story wrapped in that of after the book, what does it mean? Sure. And who do I have to be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe just loving to hear what the topics people are interested in. Mm. I've got some ideas and I think I've gotten pretty clear on it, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what I would need to receive right now, but I'll think about it.
Yeah. Well, I got you. I want you to win. And I just adore the hell out of you. I'm glad we got to spend some time chatting. Is there anything, any final words of wisdom that you want to leave us with?
Hmm. I think that, you know, this work to me is so beautiful and so expansive. And I hope that people will lean into it. And, you know, the timing of leaning into it, you know, it just is. And sometimes we feel called to it at certain times in our lives. And sometimes it's that rock bottom, like you said, or sometimes it's a conversation that you have with a person. But I would encourage anybody who's listening to start to ask themselves some of the questions that we posed and named in this podcast, and to trust that the work does lead you somewhere if you are really truly willing to dive into it. And there's something really beautiful on the other side. So
I love that idea that like curiosity is a prerequisite for magic, right? Like it starts with just asking a couple questions, being gentle, poking around your soul a little bit, seeing what comes up. And I know we can find you at Instagram at MindfulMFT, but where else on the internet are you? Do you want to promote anything at the moment aside from your best-selling book that's coming out in 2021?
In 2041. MindfulMFT on Instagram. My website is newyorkcouplescounseling.com. Got a retreat coming up in the new year, January 2nd through 5th. We're halfway full. We've got a few spots left, 7 spots left to be exact. It's in upstate New York, and it is truly a, you know, transformative, really beautifully healing experience that not hyperbole is life-changing, or at least the people who come to it say. And so if you're looking to like reconcile or, you know, address something that you've been avoiding or that's been just taking up space in your life that you want to move through, then this retreat is for you. It's not a particular topic. It's just whatever is going on in your life. We're going to do very deep individual work with each person there in a group setting. So it's cool. And we'll be launching.
That's on your website, New York Couples.
It's on newyorkcouplescounseling.com. It's on the website. It's in my, on my Instagram link in the bio. And then we'll be launching the course, the Get the Love You Want course, in early 2020, the third round of it. It's a 6-week online course that is so freaking good. And it's the last time we're doing it with a couple of coaching calls with Connor and me. So
we should clarify, I guess, that when you say we, you're referencing your husband.
My husband. Yes.
Connor Beaton.
Yeah.
Should we say how great he is just on the air so that just in case he listens to this one day? We just love him.
We love him.
What's your favorite thing about being married to Connor Beaton?
Oof, one. Oh my gosh. I mean, I think that man is the most grounded human being I have ever come across, who is so willing to do the work and grow and transform and own, like, who he is today, who he's become, is such a man that I'm so proud of him. And I know that the work has been hard for him along the way, and you know, who he was maybe years ago is just entirely different. And so it is an honor to be his partner. It is it's lucky me, because this man is just the biggest gem in the world that there is for me. And he holds it still when the chaos is there for me. And he just calls me forward in the most beautiful way. So yeah. And he is the best that I know that comes to working with men. I've never seen somebody do the work that he does. It's really powerful. So hopefully that's a good,
I mean, that was pretty decent. If somebody said that about me, I'd be very excited.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that was good.
That was good.
Yeah, you're great. I adore you. I love you. I'm grateful that you're in the world doing what you're doing. And the stuff that you talk about and share is so powerful. And I love that you have a platform to do that and that people are listening to you. And I encourage anybody listening, follow this woman. And you may as well follow Connor Beaton after that plug from his wife. And go to New York. Do all the things.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. I don't know. I got nothing.
That's good. Okay. And I adore you and love you. And thank you for this.
Thanks.
Thank you for the chat.
It was fun. When you when you write your book, you should come back on and we can talk about it.
I will.
We'll laugh about it. Remember that time when I was scared to write my book and I didn't want the attention?
Uh-huh.
That was silly.
That was silly. Look at me now.
Look at me now.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right.
Oh, Vienna Farren. Gosh, she's so good, right? I was feeling a little bit down at the start of that episode. She picked me right up. So much wisdom. I would highly encourage you to check her out on Instagram at MindfulMFT. She has taught me lots about love and relationship. She is a good friend. She's such a good human. Her and Connor do really good work together. Do check out the link in the show notes regarding their upcoming retreat in the early January, part of the new year. They're doing events all the time. If you're in New York, she does stuff with the class. She speaks. She's got a practice in Manhattan. Just go and find her. Get some Vienna Farren in your life. You will not regret it. And until next time, I love you. I so appreciate that you are here listening to my voice right now. It is something that I do not take for granted. If you would like to help me out, I would humbly request a nice review on the internet. 5 stars would be amazing. And also, if you can help me make a positive impact in this world by spreading these podcasts out on the internet, send them to your friends and family, anybody that you think might benefit from this wisdom that Vienna shared, would be awesome. Because you know what? We got to make the world a better place, and we can do that together. So, until next time, do not forget that you are amazing and wonderful and passionate and worthy and delicious and divine and all good things, okay?